Well, good morning, everyone. How are y'all?
Is it on?
No, it's being recorded. It doesn't go through here. As John said, I'm Jay Tremblay. I'm the stewardship pastor here. Ron is our administrative pastor. We'll both get into each of our stories a little bit before we jump into actually what stewardship is. I've been at Grace Chapel for, I guess, 17 years now. My wife, Patty, and I have been in California, we came from California, moved out here in 1998, and I've been on staff for 11 years now. And my wife, Patty, she is Pastor Steve's assistant, so you might see her around as well. I like to say I was born Catholic, because there's not really a choice. When you're in the Catholic religion, you are christened when you were 1 month old. You have no recollection of it whatsoever. It wasn't a conscious choice to follow Jesus. Any previous Catholics in here? About half the room. Awesome. So you understand what I'm saying. But the whole time, I went through Catholic school, kindergarten through senior year, and the whole time, I mean, we were very faithful in going to church every Sunday. But I was always questioning. I never really understood, and it never set well with me, that I needed to talk to a priest to talk to God. And there was never that really personal relationship with God. And after high school, my parents divorced, and I just stopped going to church. Fast forward a few years, I met my wife, who was a Free Will Baptist, so a slight difference in beliefs, to say the least. And I didn't want to go to her church, and she didn't want to go to my church, so we just didn't go to church for a while. And then, I guess it was 1993, we were in a worship service, and the only seats available were in the front row. So we marched up to the front row with my wife's parents. And the whole time during worship, the worship leader was singing, like, through me. She was, like, drilling her eyes through me, and I was so uncomfortable, I got up and I left. Left my wife there with her parents, and I went and sat in the back row of the balcony and sulked. So during that service, it ended up being a salvation message, and God was just wrestling with me throughout that service. And they did an altar call at the end, and here I come from the back row of the balcony right in front of my wife and accepted Jesus right there. So in front of her and her parents. So after that, our daughter was born, I guess a couple years before that. But we really decided at that point, I decided, you know, we need to go to church. I need to be the spiritual leader of my household. But I didn't want to go to Patty's church. She didn't want to go to mine. So we went to church separately. You know, I went to my church. She went to her church again. But that pride thing was in my way. So we did that for probably a few months. And then I just decided that, I mean, God decided for me, obviously, but God led me to start going to church at the Baptist church. So we did that, and the one thing that was very different for me, and from the moment I walked into the Baptist church, I mean, in the Catholic church, it's very liturgical. It's 45 minutes, you're up, you're down, you're up, you're down, you kneel, you're out. And, I mean, it's a five-minute homily, and that's it. But when the first time I went to the Baptist church, and it was, you know, 40 minutes of music, it wasn't worship to me at the time, it was music. And people were raising their hands, wasn't sure what that was about. And then a 45-minute message, I'm like, come on, I've got to get to lunch. I mean, my stomach was growling. So it took me some time to get used to that for sure. But we moved out here in 98, and we started going to a very small church in Franklin called Calvary Chapel of Franklin. And it was about 70 people or so, very small. We loved it. We were plugged in. And then our neighbors introduced us to Grace Chapel. They were saying, you need to go to Grace Chapel. I'm like, no, we're good. We really like where we're at. We're serving. We're plugged in. Really enjoy it. So the first time we actually were introduced to Grace Chapel was going to a Sunday in the South picnic. It's much like our 4th of July celebration we're going to have next month. Just a big old church family picnic. And I just fell in love with the people right away. And from that point on, for about, I would say, a month, the Holy Spirit was just accosting me with Grace Chapel. Like, everywhere I would go in Franklin, I would meet people from Grace Chapel. I would drive down Highway 96, and my head would just physically turn down Old Hillsboro Road. I would see the word grace just popping out everywhere in the Bible, just wherever I was. So it's like, okay, God, I think you're trying to get my attention. So we went over to Grace Chapel for the first time and absolutely fell in love with it. Went back to our church the next week and said, we love y'all, but we're leaving. God's calling us somewhere else. That was in 2000. From that point on, I have never stepped foot in another church on a Sunday morning. Absolutely love it here. Absolutely love it. And then was blessed to be able to come on staff back in 2011. So that's my story. Ron, I'm sticking to it. You do your testimony.
Okay. Well, that's amazing. I've known Jay for 17 years, and that's the first time I've heard that story. He doesn't share it much, I guess. Well, again, my name is Ron Klontz. Ministry pastor here at Grace Chapel. I guess my story is, my wife and I have been married 51 years. Jackie and Mike know Pat. But we really didn't go to church all that much. I was in the Air Force for 4 years right after we got married, overseas for 18 months, came back, got through, started college. Then in 1970, we just decided that we needed to get back in church, and so we started attending Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa, which is what they call the mother church of Calvary Chapels. And so we started going there and really started getting involved, and then we moved to a little town called Diamond Bar, which was about 60 miles from Calvary Chapel, and so we just stopped going. And that was in approximately 1976. And then we bounced around to different churches. We were involved in a couple of church plants, a Brethren in Christ church and some other ones, and just really weren't comfortable. In 1985, we found a Calvary Chapel, Brea Canyon, and we started going there. It was another Calvary Chapel that we were really comfortable with. And in 1989, I met Steve Berger. And from that time, my life changed drastically. 1990, we started Calvary Chapel Diamond Bar. We were together there for 4 years. I as a volunteer, I did all the business management of the church. 1992, we came back to Franklin, Tennessee, with a friend of ours was here making a CD. And so Steve and Sarah, Pat, and I came back, and we were here over Labor Day. And we fell in love with the place, and Steve just says, we can start a church here. 1994, Steve says, it's time to go. So I quit my job. I was the CIO of a 850-bed teaching hospital in California. And we decided in April we were going to move, and by May, Steve and Sarah and two other couples were here. Pat and I moved in August. And so then I came here without a job, and was one of the few times that I really had to trust God for finances, because we had been doing very well in California, moved here without a job. So we had to basically live on $2,000 a month. And it was kind of scary for us, but if we look back on that, it was the best time that we ever had, just being able to do things together, do things that were cheap, not do a lot of dining out and that things. But we had good friends here, and we had a good church. So anyway, I came on staff in 2002. I was still doing the business stuff as a volunteer from home for those 9 years, but when we purchased the land and decided to build a building, then Steve says, okay, you're coming on staff now. And prior to that time, I was a controller for a software company, and I said, no, I can't do that. The church can't afford it. He says, you're coming on. Because we were building the church tax exempt, and we had to process all the invoices ourselves, so my workload quadrupled. But anyway, all of that, we stayed till 2007. My dad had an attack of dual pulmonary embolisms, and it just about sent him to heaven. And so he was in California, and we had to move back to Arizona to take care of Mom and Dad. That time he was 94. He went to heaven when he was 97. And my mom's still alive now. She'll be 99 next month. And so it was tough leaving there, but we finally moved back after 10 years. We just decided that it was too tough traveling. We were back and forth to Tennessee every quarter for 10 years. And my wife said, "I've had it. I can't do it anymore." So we bought a house in Spring Hill, moved back, and we're really happy. We're glad to be back home. Yes, sir.
I've only been here since the middle of January this year, but this is such an awesome congregation. The people are so wonderful here and everything. And you've known Pastor Steve for a long time. How in the dickens did he find a place that's not exactly on the beaten path out here?
Well, When we got back here, Steve and I, he wasn't working, and I was running a computer store that wasn't selling any computers, and so we just kind of took up residence out here. When we first came back here in 1992, we kind of settled on Leaper's Fork, Southwest Williamson County. We just drove through here. We were here for 4 days, and we drove out here every day. So then we just decided that this is where we're going to plant the church. And everybody's saying, "You're crazy. That's out in the country. Nobody's going to come." And so we looked around and looked. Even after we started the church, nobody was coming. You know, after probably a year, we had maybe 85 or 90 people. And we're just saying, "God, is this really what you want?" So we looked around different places, and every door we went to, God closed. And so we came out and said, "This is it." I remember we went to the Hillsboro Middle School, and here's Steve. I think he was 24, 25. He had a mullet down to his shoulders, if you could believe. And we walked over to Hillsboro Middle School, and we said, "Can we schedule a meeting with the principal?" And the receptionist said, "Sure, let me go see if he's available." Walked right into his office. Said, "Mr. York, would love to start a church in your school. Will you give us permission?" "Absolutely. It's yours. Do whatever you want." And it just, I mean, here's two guys from California that he never met before. I mean, at that time, people thought we were a cult, really. The three of the four families that moved here all drove white minivans, either Dodge or Chrysler caravans. And so Naomi Judd thought we were in a cult. So anyway, but that's just God's blessing that he opened every door that needed to be open. And when we would go someplace else where he didn't want us, he'd close the door. And what's an interesting fact is that when we decided we were going to come to Franklin to start a church, it was going to be Calvary Chapel Franklin. But there was already one here. So that's how we got Grace Chapel. So did that answer your question?
Yes.
And one of the coolest things is that almost everybody that I talk to, when they come on campus, walk into the doors, they feel the power of the Holy Spirit in the building. I mean, person after person after person stated that. It's like Jay said, when we went there, we're home. And that time after time after time, people have told us that.
I talked to and had my son over the phone before I moved out here. I felt the power of Grace Chapel. He told me so many times about it, and I'm just,
yes.
I've got to go.
Yeah.
The situation presented itself, and boy, I have not been sorry.
Yeah.
I'm so happy.
That's awesome.
Our time in Arizona, we could not find a church that we liked, and it was just a really, really dry period for us.
It's the hand of God that's
yes,
upon this place.
It
it's upon Pastor Steve. You have to want to come here. I mean, most people live more than 20 minutes away. We've lived half an hour away for 17 years, and it hasn't stopped us at all. We want to come here. I mean, you've got 6,000 people that want to come to Grace Chapel,
sure.
So it's pretty awesome. All right, so what is stewardship? Stewardship, a lot of people think that stewardship is just giving of your finances, and it's really giving of your time, your talent, and your treasure. So that's my role here. I help people with these three areas. I'm over the volunteers, all of the first contact volunteers, kind of all of the administrative functions in the office I oversee as well, and then I help Ron with the finances as well. So first we're going to talk about the truths about tithing. I'm going to go through these really quick, and then I'll summarize at the end. Page 53, I believe. Okay, so number one, what is tithing? Tithing means a tenth part. Number two, what is the difference between a tithe and an offering? A tithe is the first tenth of my income, and an offering is anything I give in addition to the tithe. Number three, what's the purpose of tithing? Number four, when do I tithe? And that's on a regular basis. Number five, where should I tithe? And that's where I worship. Malachi 3:10 says, bring your whole tithe to my storehouse. So growing up Catholic, I was never really taught about tithing. I don't know if any of you ex-Catholics were taught either, but I certainly wasn't. My example of tithing was going to church faithfully every week. My dad, when the offering basket would come around, he'd pull out his wallet and throw a 20 in there. So that was what I was taught growing up. So, you know, I get married and we go to church and, you know, the offering comes around and pull out my wallet. And I don't even think I threw in a 20. It was probably a 5 or a 10 actually at the time, being a young married couple. And I kind of get a look from my wife, who was taught about tithing. And we had a little discussion later. She's like, what was that? You know, I'm like, what? She goes, why'd you only put like probably $5 in there? Well, what'd you want me to put in there? She's like, tithing's 10% of your income. I'm like, what? 10% of my income? Yeah. Net or gross? I'm like, doing the calculation in my head. It's like, gross. I'm like, what? Like, I had no idea. No idea. And it took me a while to get there. It took us a while to get there for sure. But, I mean, I just honestly had no idea that, number one, what tithing meant, that it actually meant a tenth. And that God was actually just asking us to be obedient and give back to him what's already his. So it took me a while for sure. There are some questions that I get about tithing. Number one is that one, net or gross, and it's obviously your gross income. And some people will ask me, well, what about charitable organizations? You know, I give to Mercy Ministries or Caleb or United Way or what have you. Those are offerings above the tithe. That's not included in your tithe. The tithe is unrestricted funds going to the church to let God decide where those funds are going to go. Some people will designate money. Okay, I want money to go to missions, or I want money to go you know, the refugees or anything like that. And that's all awesome. Those are offerings. So just to be clear, those are above the tithe, which is the general offering. And then when do I tithe? I get questions about that as well. Well, I mean, if you want to be legalistic about it, which we're not, it's, you know, as soon as you receive the income. So on payday, if you want to write your check, that's great. Or you want to use online banking, that's great. We don't check that. And we have the ability that God blessed us with to kind of forget about who gives what. You know, we're not in there looking. It's like, okay, Mike and Jackie, you know, here's your record. We don't see that at all. And the good thing is Pastor Steve has no idea who gives what. And it gives him complete freedom to let it rip every single Sunday. Because he could be talking about a sensitive subject. I mean, series that we're in right now is a difficult one. So when he gets up there and he's talking about abortion, and you know he doesn't want to offend someone who's had an abortion, he knows that, and they're a huge giver, he doesn't have to worry about that because he doesn't know who gives what. So he can just be completely honest and transparent and just preach the truth, you know. So And the other thing is online giving. I like to talk about that as well. Some people like to give online. I give online. It's wonderful because I can schedule it off of my paycheck, and I don't have to think about forgetting the check on Sunday morning. It's like, oh, I forgot it, and don't have to worry about that at all. When the offering comes around on Sunday morning, I pray over my offering, just like I had put it in right there, but it let me schedule it online, and it's wonderful. Need to know about that, I can talk to you about that. We have about 50% of the church actually gives online, which is wonderful because it cuts administrative time on our end. If you think about 6,000 people and if everyone were to give in the basket every week, it takes a lot of time to process that. We have no problem doing that. I mean, God's paying us to do that, so don't get me wrong, but the online option just helps us to be a little bit more efficient in what we do.
Okay, the next section. Why does God want me to give? I am a steward. We're a steward of everything that God gives us, our time, our resources, and our talents. So number one, my stewardship reflects my commitment to discipleship. And that's basically, if you're disciplined in giving, you're committed to it, then you're going to be able to disciple people and receive discipling. God makes me more godly, or giving makes me more godly. God's a giving God, so we should imitate what God does. Giving draws me closer to God. And then giving is an antidote to materialism. Materialism. The divine prescription for coveting is giving. If you're holding on to things really tight and not wanting to give, then you're coveting those material things that you're holding on to. The story about the monkey that was in the cage, and there was a banana outside the cage, and he reaches out to get the banana so he can eat, but he wouldn't let go of the banana to get his hand back in, so he starved to death. That's what materialism is, not willing to release those things and give them back to God. Giving strengthens my faith. And then don't let the lack of faith keep you from giving cheerfully and generously. And then my friend James Ryle used to say, God can do more with your 90% than we can do with 100% of it. We just have to trust God that he's going to be honorable to his word, and that he's going to reward us for our giving. Giving is an investment in eternity. And giving blesses me in return. And then lastly, giving makes me happy. I'd like to share a story that I experienced, oh gosh, it must have been 15 years ago. And there was an elderly couple that came into the church. And at that time, Marcia Godey was our director over benevolence. And she came into my office and said, Ron, we've got this couple, and they don't go to church, but they're in the community, and they really need some help from the church. So she called me in, and this little lady, probably 85, 90 years old, proceeded to tell me that they had some emergencies come up in their family, and that their mortgage payment had to go towards this emergency. And they were there seeking some help from Grace Chapel to pay their mortgage. And so I was able to look at her and say, absolutely, we'll take care of it. And this elderly lady just broke down in tears, believing that she wasn't going to get any help. But yet, here's a church that she didn't even know, never been in before, gave them help. And that's the thing that I'm talking about. God blesses me in return for giving. That particular thing was Grace Chapel giving to this family, but it sure blessed my socks off just being able to say yes, that we're going to help you. So it works that same way with us personally. I know a couple of cases in Arizona, we had some really good friends that got into medical emergencies like that, and Pat and I were able to give them some money, and it really helped them out. So it really does make you happy, and it blesses you to give.
All right, next section, how God wants me to give. I give with the right attitude. Number one, I give expectantly. Number two, I give willingly. Number three, I give cheerfully. And number four, I give sacrificially. I want to talk about sacrificial giving for just a couple of minutes. This church has a huge, huge history of sacrificial giving. It goes back to the early days, back in 1997 when we were meeting over at Hillsborough School. Pastor Steve had gone into the principal and said, you know, how can we bless you? You've been blessing us with this space. How can we bless you? And he said, we really need a playground for the kindergartners to go out and have recess. And I think Steve walked out and said, done. So he went back to the church. Correct me if I'm wrong, because I wasn't here then. But I believe he brought that to the church and said, hey, we're going to do this. We need to raise $15,000. What, 30 people or so at the church, maybe, at the time? And we need to raise $15,000. And in one offering, they raised it like that. And it's because we have the heart and the passion of a senior pastor, number one, to lay out that vision and to say this is so much more than us. And sacrificial giving is giving until it hurts. It's not giving to be comfortable. It's not, you know, looking at your account and going, oh, I'll give a portion of this. It's, you know, that squeeze. And yeah, it's definitely opening your hands and giving that. And the wonderful thing about giving with open hands is the hands are still open to receive back. You know, if you're giving tight-fisted and you don't have a way to receive God's blessing. So always, it's a heart issue. Giving is a heart issue. It's not a legalistic thing. It's not you're going to do this because God's commanding you to do it. It's just part of our worship. We worship, and Steve says that every Sunday, we're going to continue our worship with our giving. And that's exactly what it is, and especially with sacrificial giving. Now, there were times over the next, you know, 17, 18 years where we've had sacrificial offerings. I want to talk about a couple of them. First of all, in 2004, we had a conference here by the late Dr. James Ryle, Pastor James Ryle. And it was a Friday night and a Saturday, and it was on sacrificial giving. It was called the Resource Revolution. We had about 30 to 40 families represented in that room. And on Friday night, he spoke about sacrificial giving, what it is. And like I said, it's giving until it hurts. And he challenged us that night. He said, I'm going to ask you to come back tomorrow and think about how much you're going to give in a sacrificial offering. And we didn't know where this money was going to go to. We just knew it wasn't going to stay within Grace Chapel. So not knowing what it was, Patty and I both went home and we prayed about it. We prayed separately and heard from God. It's like, what do you want to give? So I went up to Patty and I said, so what did you hear? And she told me, and I'm like, same number I heard. So, I mean, we compared notes and we prayed over that and decided we were going to give this amount. Well, with those 30 families that night, we raised $62,000 in one offering. Again, not knowing where it was going. The next morning, on Sunday, we brought in a family who they were on their way back from vacation and were in a tragic car accident. They lost the father and one of the children. So we brought in the mother and the rest of the family. They didn't go to this church. We found out about them through another church. And we raised money that morning and gave it all away to them. What we didn't know is what God was going to do in our lives as a result of that sacrificial giving, because the amount that we gave was pretty much everything we had. And that very next day, I received a promotion with a huge raise. I mean, the very next day. The next day after that, got a brand spanking new truck. Love that truck. Anyway, I don't have it anymore.
Was this part of your promo package?
What's it? Yeah. Right.
So
he did. But even bigger is my wife had started a business, and we had borrowed some money from my in-laws to fund that business. And they didn't know we had just gone through this exercise at all. And later that week, it was Thursday, my mother-in-law called us up and said, you know that loan that we had given you? It said, it's paid, forgiven, gone. all of that week far exceeded what we had given. I mean, God just blessed us in return. And the funny thing is, it's not just about financial blessings. It can be about something else. A few years later, we had done another sacrificial offering, and my daughter, she was in high school at the time, and she loved to cheerlead, just did it since middle school, and she did not make the team sophomore year, and she didn't make it the next 2 years, but senior year came, and she was going to try out again. She was diligent about it, and we had just had a sacrificial offering, and it was an opportunity, a teaching opportunity for me. She said, "Dad, how much should I give?" I'm like, well, I can't tell you. You have to hear from God on what you should give. This is what I would do, but, you know, you need to pray about it. And she gave everything that she had in her savings account, which, you know, wasn't much for a high schooler, but it was a lot to her. And right after that, they had the cheer tryouts, and she made the team. And she made cheer captain, actually, as a result. And this was, you know, a couple months later, and she goes, "Dad, I just realized." She goes, "I had just given like everything I had. God blessed me with this." So it wasn't a financial blessing, but it was, you know, he will grant you the desires of your heart. And this was something obviously that she wanted and was important to her. And absolutely. So that very next year in 2005, we had the Resource Revolution again. And that year there were probably 50 or 60 families represented, and in that one offering, $148,000 was brought in. And I don't know if you remember, but this was right around the Iraq War, the start of that, and Daniel Pearl was a journalist who was over there, and he was beheaded in Iraq. And we brought his widow and daughter in and gave all of that away to her, blessed that family. She was just entering college, and it was a great college fund for her. 2006, at the time, we were only in the sanctuary building. The building that we're sitting in here and the one where the fellowship hall and everything is, those weren't built yet. And we were busting at the seams, had grown exponentially, and it was time to build. So Steve, at the beginning of the year, January, he laid out the vision of what we were going to do, let everyone know we're going to have the sacrificial offering at the end of the year. And on Thanksgiving weekend, we went down to one service, brought everyone in, and just had a worship service. And at that time, everyone brought their tithes and offerings. It was an amazing sight because we put a basket in the front of the church, and families just came and dropped their offering in there, knelt, prayed, wept over this offering. We needed to raise $2 million for the building, $2 million. That was a lot of money. And in one offering, we brought in $2.8 million. God was so faithful. It was just, he's amazing at the way he blesses us.
How many people were in the church at that time?
At that time, it was about 1,500 total people, adults and children, in 06. Yeah. When we moved into this building in 03, we were about 400 people. And not quite, yeah, like 350, 400. So in a matter of 3 years, we grew to 1,500 people and then brought that in the one offering. Fast forward a few more years, and we were in this building. We were getting ready to build this building and, again, needed to raise a large amount of money. Good Friday service, 2011, in one offering brought in $3.8 million. That's the people of this church giving sacrificially. They gave so you could be in here right now, you know, having that vision, God planning that vision, saying, look what I can do with this. And it's not about a building. It's not. It's about what we can do in that building. So don't want anyone to ever think that, oh, they're just building. They're just, you know, wanting these big structures. And it's not about that at all. Our heart is to see people equipped to be passionate servants of Jesus Christ. And sometimes we need buildings to do that.
Yeah, Myron told me on the way in only one mic works. Giving God my treasure, as Jay was explaining, the folks would, on these two sacrificial offerings, the folks would come forward, boxes in the front, and they'd kneel down and pray. We got treasures in, not money, but treasure, diamond rings, art, gold necklaces, motorcycles. I mean, all manner of things that Jay had to go down to the local pawn shop and hawk. But but people, you could tell that by what was given that these things were people's treasure. They were more valuable than money. One of them, we got 200 ounces of silver. And so it's amazing how God touches people to do these things. And so ultimately, God is the one who provides us with all that we have. He's the giver of all of our gifts. In James, it talks about every good and perfect gift comes from the Father of lights. So everything that we have comes from God our Father. Our possessions belong to God. He has provided them for us to use and to steward over. That's why we have to be good stewards of what he's given us. My treasure includes proper care of my body. I really need to adhere to that one. But our body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, and so we need to cherish it and protect it. I pay a special attention to those relationships that God partners me with and those who share a common vision for kingdom advancement. That's really important. Good relationships are one of the best treasures that we have because they last forever. When deciding where and to whom to give, I listen to the Holy Spirit and obey. Jay gave a perfect example of that. My wife and I, we did the same thing, came up with the same amount that we were going to give. It's really interesting how that works. Offerings which are given above the tithe may be given to the poor, to the needs of those in God's family, and to the advancement of God's kingdom and purposes. So those are things that, like Jay was talking, Mercy Ministries, what's the guy's name? The guy in India. Lamuel in India, giving to him to further the kingdom in India, where Christians are absolutely terrified there. Giving God my time. Time is a gift. We all have the same amount of time each day. What do I do with my time? I submit my time to God so that he can order my day for kingdom purposes. I spend my time based on my values. My values determine my priorities. And God has determined that one day in seven is to be a Sabbath. We have 168 hours in a week. Now, if we apply the tithing rule to that, that's 16.8 hours that we should be giving to God. Most Christians, they give about 2 hours the time they spend in church. I want to give you maybe a time management thing. When I was working for LA County, we did a very quick program that lasted about 30 days where we instructed our staff to document their time in half-hour increments. So they would go through their 8-hour day. Every half hour, they would write down what they did for that last half hour. And we did that for a month. Come back to find out that we got about 6 hours of productive time from our people. The other 2 hours was restroom, talking on the phone, working on the internet, just different things. So it might be a good idea for all of us to take our day and see where we're spending our time. Are we spending it on kingdom activity? Or are we watching TV? Or are we playing games on the internet or whatever? Look at what we're doing with our time, and can we be using it more productive for God's kingdom?
I retired last Thanksgiving, and shortly after that, I started doing my daily quiet time, and really, one of the things I prayed for is, God, what do you want me to do? Because obviously, I wasn't accomplishing anything I went and picked up my wife's laundry from the cleaners and made dinner occasionally to run the vacuum, but I wasn't using my time. I was watching The Price is Right at General Hospital. I really wasn't using my time wisely, and I prayed on it every day, and it's funny how opportunities present themselves. All of a sudden, my wife's business partner called and said, hey, they have an opportunity over at our thrift store, which is involved with the church here. And so now I go there every Wednesday all day, and I I'm telling you, it's the highlight of the week. And no matter how much pain I'm in that week or having trouble walking, when I'm there, I feel no pain. And then I kept listening and still praying. And I'm like, God, you know, I got at least one more day to give to you. What, you know, what else do you have for me? And sure enough, I started volunteering now at the Hope Clinic downtown. Both things that are involved with the church, but they came upon me, but I was listening to God to present those opportunities to me. And I was praying on it every day during my quiet time. And I think that's what brought those opportunities to me. And I'm telling you, they're the two most fulfilling days of my week now. Yeah. And I love it.
Awesome.
I think Steve said something very important last Sunday, is that, that when you get out of bed in the morning, ask the Holy Spirit to empower you, to come upon you, so that, that as you go through that day, you'll be able to do what he's commanding you to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very, very good, I mean, ask God, and yeah, he'll deliver. You know, he doesn't say no. His word doesn't come back void.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, next section, giving God my talents. Number one, God has uniquely created me and given me various talents, abilities, and giftings for his glory. Number two, I ask myself, what are my natural abilities God has given me? What are my acquired skills? Number three, I'm a steward who one day will give an account of how I use what God has given me. You know, I'm in a fortunate position. I'm here on staff at the church, so, you know, I get paid for doing ministry work. But prior to being on staff, you know, I wasn't paid. I was a volunteer, just like many of the people of this church are. And that's where I was giving God my talent. You know, he uniquely gifts each of us to do different things, whether it's the gift of hospitality or the gift of administration or whatever that is. One of the things that God gifted me with years ago was the ability to play volleyball. I love playing volleyball. And you might think that's silly, you know, it's a sport. What does that have to do with kingdom work? But I can tell you, before I became a Christian, I wasn't the best sport when playing that game. You know, I might have been a little colorful with my language or...
Emergency language.
What's that?
Emergency language.
Yes, ma'am. But as I was saved and as God was shaping and molding me, people could see that because it was the same group of people I was playing with, and they noticed, what's different about you? And it gave me an opportunity. It gave me a platform. It's like, let me tell you what's different. You know, I now have Jesus in my life, and it gave me an opportunity to minister to people. There are people in this church today that are going here as a result of me ministering to them on the volleyball court. So outside of what I do for this church, I use that as my platform to reach people. It's not uncommon to find me praying with someone off in a corner in a gym because I notice they are having a bad day. So that's what I use. God has given me that ability, and I use it for his glory. So I challenge you. Think about, what has God given you? You know, how can you use that? There's someone that goes to this church that is a loan officer in a bank. And he, after every single loan, he prays with those individuals, whether they want it or not. He's going to pray over that loan. He's going to pray over them. So, you know, he's given him the ability in the finance industry to be able to use that to reach people for his glory. So I challenge you, you know, is it crafting? Is it whatever it is, you know, seek ways to be able to reach people through what God has given you. John, turning it back over to you.